Well, it's good to be here and good to see all of you as always. A few weeks ago, I know Claire came from, is it Mozambique? Yeah, Mozambique. And I can assure you, she didn't swim. She came by different planes. Is that right? How many planes you took? Two. Good on you. Four planes. And I know you're going back soon also.
Yes.
Yep. I also know that Mr. McIndoe went off on some kind of a luxury cruise. Well, a cruise. And to get to the cruise, I believe you had to take a plane or a few planes. One plane?
Two.
Two planes. Right. And we went to America on the 19th of May. And came back last Sunday evening. Sorry I missed your thing.
We missed you as well, but we still welcome next time.
I misled you, saying that we would be landing back in Newcastle at 11:30 and I'll try to come at 4:00. But I was looking at the wrong sheet. That was 11:30 in Amsterdam. And then we had to wait about 5 hours to get here. So sorry about that. But delighted to see you. I have a work colleague, whenever she goes on holiday that involves flying with airplane, she tells me that she makes sure her will is in order because she kind of expects to die because you can't do much if something's wrong up there. So, here is the thing. When you sit in a plane, that flies about over 500 miles per hour. And I believe most people, if not everyone, has been in a plane. Yeah? I'm assuming that. And if not, give it a go. But after what I'm going to tell you now, you might not want to go. When you sit in a plane that flies over 500 miles per hour, you hope that whoever put that thing together, that they've done a good job. Right? Because you see, when you're up in the air, if it breaks down, you can't call the breakdown service, right? And you can't come out and repair the thing. There is also no room for error from the pilot. And you have literally no choice but to trust the pilot completely. Your whole life is in the hands of the pilot, and you just hope that he, she knows what they're doing. Now, one of the ways in which God operates is that he sometimes puts us in situations similar to being in an airplane, where there is nothing we can do but to completely trust in him. If it goes right, you sit tight. If it goes wrong, you still sit tight. Your life is totally out of your control. So these days, in the so-called affluent West, we have families, we have friends, we have jobs. We've got good pensions, I think. We've got health. We've got houses. We've got lots of food. Whether you could afford to buy the thing or not, that's a different story. We've got plenty of material possessions. We even got plenty weapons of war to shoot our way out of wars and sometimes to shoot ourselves into war. Things are going great, isn't it? Who needs God? So what we're going to do in this short-ish sermon is to look at the life of David and how he moved from one level, whatever level he was, to a higher level with God. And believe me, there are Christians who come and who are at different levels with God. I read Tony's latest email, which he circulated, I believe it was yesterday or the day before, that talked about world changers. And I believe you've read it. And it talks about three kinds of Christians. And it goes to three different levels of Christians who see the problem and what they do about it, and another one who just complain about it, and another one who just said there are problems, and then the third and smallest group about people who actually do something about it and are world changers. Well, in the same way, we have Christians at different levels. So whatever level you are at, I'm going to put a challenge to you today to try and move from that level to a higher level. And we're going to do that by looking at the life of David and how it happened for him. So, if you want a topic, it's as simple as moving to a higher level with God. And I'm going to support that with Psalm 57, which I'm going to read for you now from the New International Version. So, let me read Psalm 57. Have mercy on me, O God. Have mercy on me. For in you my soul takes refuge. I will take refuge in the shadow of your wings until the disaster has passed. I cry out to God Most High, to God who fulfills his purpose for me. He sends from heaven and saves me, rebuking those who hotly pursue me. God sends his love and his faithfulness. I am in the midst of lions. I lie among the ravenous beasts, men whose teeth are spears and arrows, whose tongues are sharp swords. Be exalted, O God, above the heavens. Let your glory be over all the earth. They spread a net for my feet. I was bowed down in distress. They dug a pit in my path, but they have fallen into it themselves. My heart is steadfast, O God. My heart is steadfast. I will sing and make music. Awake, my soul, awake, harp and lyre. I will awaken the dawn. I will praise you, O Lord, among the nations. I will sing of you among the peoples. For great is your love, reaching to the heavens. Your faithfulness reaches to the skies. Be exalted, O God, above the heavens. Let your glory be over all the earth. That's God's word. A psalm of David. And let me read for you also Psalm 62, verses 1 to 2. My soul finds rest in God alone. My salvation comes from him alone. He alone is my rock and my salvation. He is my fortress. I shall never be shaken. David was anointed by Samuel to be king, but the throne was not passed to him immediately. He had to wait a long time. You know the story, right? He had to wait until God said it was time. So David comes to prominence by killing Goliath. You know the story, right? And after this, King Saul, the king at the time, made David commander of his army. And David won every battle that he was sent on. He was successful and popular. And in 1 Samuel 18, verses 6 to 7, it says that women lined the streets and sang as David and his army returned successfully, victoriously from battle. And let me quote what it says, part of that reference. Saul has slain his thousands and David his 10,000s. Imagine the crowd shouting, David, David, David. Who? And little by little, David's security was beginning to be based on his popularity and success. And God wanted a king who would trust in him and him alone. Not in success, not in such kind of victories and popularity or anything else, but in him and him alone. And so, to make him what he wants him to be, one by one, God started to take away the things in his life. And that's essentially what we're going to look at. So let me first put to you his position. Now, at work, now, I sit in many disciplinary hearings to help support staff when they trust or somebody accuse them of something and they have to come before a disciplinary panel, which could be a really, really difficult thing. And sometimes the case is proved and sometimes the case is not proved. And I've ended up on many occasions having to beg for people, and I can beg really well, right? Just for them not to be dismissed. And as an alternative to being dismissed, or one of the penalties that the panel might give to a staff who's been disciplined is demotion. So you move from a higher grader band to a lower band. So take, for example, one case that I was in, a qualified staff nurse, because of some performance issues to do with medication errors, was demoted to a lower grade to work, not as a qualified staff, but at a lower band to kind of get more experience and training and then to move back up. Okay. You know, I have seen such people, some of them become emotional wrecks, because demotion hits at the very core of a person's pride and self-esteem. It can be very humiliating. Imagine suddenly you say to Tony, you can't do what you're doing now, you've got to sit at the back and all you can do is X, Y, and Z. In 1 Samuel chapter 18 and verse 13, Saul demoted David. Instead of keeping him on as commander of the army, he gave him charge of only 1,000 men. He probably didn't like the woman singing and chanting, Dave, King has slain, Saul has slain his thousands, and David his 10,000s. David was demoted. Instead of being in charge of the whole army, commander of the army, he was now just a leader of 1,000 men. He lost his position as commander of the army. So that was like the first thing he lost, his position. Now, as you know, David was married to one of Saul's daughters. So Saul was his father-in-law. But Saul wanted David dead because of David's popularity. So Saul sent soldiers to surround David's house and kill him. However, David's wife, Michal, learned of this murderous plan and helped him escape. So David escaped. But here is the thing. In doing so, he had to leave his wife. And eventually, he lost his wife. In 1 Samuel 25 and verse 44, that is like the last verse of that chapter, chapter 25. Saul gave David's wife to another man, and there was nothing David could do about it. So now, we've got a David who's got no job, and he's got no wife. And when things start to get as bad as that, what do we do? No job and no wife. Well, a few years ago, when I was manager of the healthcare department or the hospital in one of the in the Northumberland prisons, a member of my staff, a staff nurse, came to me. She lived in Red Row. I think some people know Red Row going that way, yeah? A member, she came to me and told me all about these bad things of her husband, of her husband's behavior and how terrible he was. And I listened to her. She was in tears at one point. And I had told all my staff, I've got an open door policy, just come in and see me. So I listened to her and then I asked her, how do you think you contributed to what is happening? And there was silence. And then she broke the silence, because I didn't break the silence. It's a technique, right? When there is silence, the temptation is to talk. Don't talk. Leave it. So I just left it. And then she said, I thought, Estuar, you were supposed to be supporting me. And I said, I am. So you've heard a little bit about phones already, haven't you? So let's hear a little bit more about it. Mine's not as good as yours, Joanne. It's only a Samsung Note 4. So I've just opened it because you can't open it unless you have my finger to swipe it. All right, it recognizes my fingerprint. So I've opened it and I've gone there and there is a thing called contact. And I open contact and there is a whole list of people. Your phone have a contact icon, yeah? I suspect a lot of you have mobile phones, yeah? And one of the things you have in it is an option called contacts. But whether you have phones or something else, whether it's a little book you have or a sheet of paper, we have a list of contacts, people, right? And at the beginning are all the people that we like more. And then the list go down and down and down, right? You've got your favorites. And you also have maybe stars at all the people that you know to contact first when something goes wrong. Because whether you are right or wrong, if you talk to them, you know they will support you. Yeah? And they will tell you what you want to hear, whether you are right or wrong. They're nothing like me. How have you contributed to what is going on? Right? And the thing is that I've discovered is that a lot of people will phone all their favorite people who will support them and don't ask any challenging questions. Yeah. So, David, what the poor fella could do now? He's got lost his job and he lost his wife. And now he turns to his prophetic counselor. He's going to Samuel. The two of them are like that, right? And he knows that Samuel would support him without asking any question. So he went to Samuel, his spiritual mentor, his pastor, his minister, whatever you want to call him, the man who anointed him to be king. And in 1 Samuel chapter 19 and verse 18, it says, and I want to quote this, it's only about 10 words, and it says, he told Samuel everything that Saul had done to him. That's it. 1 Samuel 19, verse 18. He told Samuel everything that Saul had done to him. Now, I believe that must have been some conversation. Everything that Saul did to him. Samuel, you know what? He demoted me. He sacked me. He tried to kill me. I had to leave my wife. When Saul found out that David was with Samuel, he sent messengers to get David. But when they got there, the Spirit of the Lord took hold of them and they started to what? Prophesy. And when they didn't return to Saul, Saul sent two other groups of men. And when they got there, you know what happened? The Spirit of the Lord took hold of them and they also started to prophesy. So they didn't return either. So Saul decided, I'm going myself. So Saul went. And you know what? The Spirit of the Lord took hold of Saul and he started to prophesy. So much so that the people said, is Saul also among the prophets? What do you think is happening here? Well, look, God has chosen David to be king, but there are people who want to kill him. So, in a nutshell, God is protecting David. Is it not amazing what God will do to protect us in order to fulfill his plan for our lives? You know, I believe that I am still alive and I hope I'll wake up tomorrow morning because God isn't finished with me yet. Why should God just let us breathe his air and enjoy his world if he's got nothing for us to do? The mere fact that you are still alive means he isn't finished with you. There is something he wants you to do. You know, one of the meanings of prophecy is to get a good word from somebody. It's not always about what's going to happen in the future, to prophesy something, and there are different kinds of prophecy. There is foretelling and there is forthtelling. One is about predicting what is going to happen, like the book of Revelation probably, and then there is forthtelling, which is trying to explain and tell what's already been predicted, right? And for some of us, we would be really happy and satisfied if some good, godly person just prophesy on us and pronounce a blessing. Some people couldn't care less if they go to church or not, if they ever open a Bible or not, whether they worship God or not, whether they call on him or not. All they want is a good word from somebody. Just lay hands on me and bless me. If you don't know what I'm talking about, talk to me after. I've preached in New York to hundreds of people and Sri Lanka to thousands of people. And I know what I'm talking about. They don't care if they open the Bible and read it. But all they want, give me a good word for my life. That I would be blessed today and tomorrow and the rest of the week and my family would be blessed. And couldn't care less whether they trust in God or not. Just give me a blessing. Let me tell you this. The good word from your spiritual mentor, counselor, pastor is good. The spiritual gifts they have are great, but these things can only last for so long and can do only so much. We need God Himself, not just prophecy and our prophetic counselors. God said to David, I cannot sustain you by your reliance on Samuel, and I cannot keep these men and Saul in this state to prophesy all the time. So Samuel sent David on his way, and David will never see Samuel again because Samuel dies soon after. So now, this is what's happened in his life so far. He's got no job, he's got no wife, and he's got no spiritual counselor. Right? He's lost them all. So, who can he go to next? David goes to his best friend, Jonathan, who is Saul's son. And David said to Jonathan, what have I done to your father that he wants to kill me? So Jonathan approached his father to speak with him. But Saul was so furious that he wanted to kill Jonathan. Jonathan comes back to David and said, "Phew, this is really getting hot and dangerous. We better go our separate ways." And in 1 Samuel chapter 20, verse 41, 1 Samuel 20, 41, it says, well, it's a very emotional scene. They cried, they hugged, they kissed, and they parted. And David would see Jonathan only one more time before Jonathan is killed in battle. Jonathan, his best friend, walked away and died. Do you ever wonder why some of your best friends or some of the so-called good people in your life, I mean people close to you, walked away? Or why is it so difficult to maintain good relationship with certain people that you thought were supposed to be close to you? Well, look, there are many reasons why things happen in life. But let me put this suggestion to you. Could it be that some people who are no longer a part of your life, or who have walked away, or with whom you're having a difficult time, could it be that that's how it's meant to be, because these people are not in your best interest? Let me show you what I mean. David and Jonathan were best friends, but Jonathan was also supposed to be king, because he was Saul's eldest son. And this could have become a problem later on, because God had chosen David to be king. Could you imagine that there might have been conflict and clashes? So, this is where we're at. David lost his job. He lost his wife. He lost his pastor. He now lost his best friend. What else could he possibly lose? So, one of the many cases I dealt with when, again, I was manager of the healthcare in the prison, involves a young boy who committed a crime, was in prison, and was waiting deportation back to Angola. And he faked mental illness and ended up in the hospital in the prison. Because, well, he wasn't the only one to do it, right? in case you think only foreigners do that, right? He was one of many who faked mental illness to come to health care because you get a nice bed and a nice room, and the regime is different from being in a prison cell on the wing, right? So what he would do is throw himself on the floor, and then he would convulse, and he would start to salivate heavily, which would then fall on his chest or on the ground. And I guess what he wanted to convince us of is that he was mentally ill and that he shouldn't be deported. Now look, my heart went out to him. Really went out to him. But my professional responsibility did not allow me to classify him as insane. And so when I did my report for the court, I couldn't say to the magistrates that this boy has shown any evidence of mental illness. My heart went out to him. But he was faking mental illness. He forgot that I did a master's degree in the whole thing. What has this got to do with David? David hits rock bottom, and he is forced to seek safety. He became a refugee in the land of his enemy. He goes to Gath. Remember, he killed Goliath, who was from Gath? This is where Goliath was from. And when he went there as a refugee, because the guy has nowhere else to go now, the people recognize him. That's the little boy who killed Goliath. That's him. And they arrested him and took him to the king of Gath. And to save his life, this is what David did. And I want to read it for you. It's from 1 Samuel 21, verses 12 to 13. 1 Samuel 21, 12 to 13. So I quote. So David feigned or faked insanity in their presence. And while he was in their hands, he acted like a madman, making marks on the doors of the gate and letting saliva run down his beard. End of quote. The number one warrior in Israel lost his dignity. And just when you thought there was nothing else to lose, he lost his dignity, pretending to be mentally insane to save his life. When David realized that faking madness was not going to keep him safe, he escaped to a cave. So all the things and all the people he placed his security in were gone. Jobs gone. Wives gone. Prophetic counselor gone. Best friend is gone. Dignity is gone. Then, in that cave that he went to, it dawned upon him that I'm not even safe in this cave. And it was then that David turned completely to God. And that was when he wrote the 57th Psalm. And verse 1, have mercy on me, O God. Have mercy on me. For in you my soul takes refuge. I will take refuge in the shadow of your wings. That's when he wrote those words. And later on in his life, after he had become king and had children, and one of his sons was plotting to kill him, he wrote the 62nd Psalm. Let me quote it for you. Verse 1 and verse 2, which I already read to you. My soul finds rest in God alone, or only in God. My salvation comes from Him alone, or only from Him. He alone only is my rock and salvation. He alone only is my fortress. I shall never be shaken. Do you know that Psalm 62 is the only psalm that is referred to as, quote, the only psalm? Of course, there are many other psalms, but this one is referred to by theologians as the only psalm, because the word only is used so extensively. Every other line is a word alone or only. God only is my fortress. God only is my rock. God only is my salvation. God is the only one in whom I put my trust. It was only after David completely turned to God, a bit like being in that plane where you have to completely trust the pilot, completely. Your life is totally out of your hands and in his hands. It was only when David completely trusted in God this way that God said in 2 Samuel chapter 2, verse 1, David, now it's time for you to be king. You've trusted me like I wanted you to. Now you are ready to move from this level, David, to the higher level with me. Because now you've trusted me like I wanted you to. And I could see David. Whew, dear God, did I have to go through all of that to move with you to the next higher level? And I could hear God saying, no, you didn't have to, but that's the path you chose. And I love you so much, and I chose you to be something, and I just worked with you. He meant for Israel to get to the promised land in 2 weeks, but they chose 40 years. Moving to a higher level with God is not more of the things we have. Higher paid jobs, more status, more friends, more material possessions, or name the rest. We must be thankful for what God has blessed us with, whether that is material possession, good jobs, popularity, good friends, and so on. But all of these things and people must be kept in their proper place. Listen to this. Anything and anyone that takes God's place becomes God's enemy. And God, it seems, reserves the right to take them out. I know that's not the kind of thing that most preachers say, but that is the truth. Anyone and anything that takes the place of God becomes his enemy. And it seems from what I've told you and other references in the Bible that God reserves the right to take them out. Like David, therefore, let us put our trust totally, not in things and people, but in God, completely in God alone. So maybe you could pray this prayer that David prayed, or say what he said. Have mercy on me, O God. Have mercy on me. For in you my soul takes refuge. My soul finds rest in God, only in God. My salvation comes from God, only from God. He only is my rock and salvation. He only is my fortress. And that be as it is, I shall never be shaken. Be blessed.